One police officer has received disciplinary punishment in connection with the police action on May the 1st against the head of the government's human rights section, and the transformation of the Czech economy is estimated to have cost $23 billion. The lower house has passed a bill reducing the immunity of deputies and senators. Under the new legislation, they would be granted immunity only during their terms. Currently, if Parliament does not agree to hand over its members for prosecution, they can never again be prosecuted in the same matter. The amendment is now going to the Senate, which needs to approve it in order for it to become law. One police officer has received disciplinary punishment in connection with the police action on May the 1st against the head of the government's human rights section, Kateřina Žák. His salary will be lowered by 10% next month for not having prevented officer Tomáš Čermák from attacking and beating up Ms. Žák, who was protesting against a neo-Nazi demonstration in Prague, which the police accompanied to prevent violence. Police President Vladislav Husák has said he will ask the Interior Ministry inspection to investigate into the actions of another 10 police officers, who he says are suspected of abuse of power and negligence. And Police Chief Vladislav Husák had been among those selected to be promoted to the rank of general on Monday, the 61st anniversary of the end of World War II. But at the recommendation of Prime Minister Jiří Paroubek, President Václav Klaus did not promote him following the recent incident in which a government official was beaten up by a police officer at a demonstration. 8 Czech army officers were promoted to the rank of general on Monday at Prague Castle, where earlier over 200 new professional soldiers made their pledge of allegiance. The Finance Ministry has calculated the costs of the Czech economic transformation between 1991 and 2005 at 546 billion crowns, or $23 billion. Related costs, such as interests, amounted to another 130 billion. The ministry carried out the analysis based on data from the Czech National Bank, the Czech Consolidation Agency, the National Property Fund, and the Land Fund. Over 5,000 candidates are going to contest for the 200 seats in the lower house of the Czech parliament in next month's general elections, the Czech Statistics Office said on Tuesday. Out of the total, some 1,400 are women, which is just under 28%. Altogether, 26 political parties and groupings will be taking part in the polls, but almost 40% of the candidates are not members of any political party. The average age is 46 years. Dozens of the candidates have just reached 21 years of age, the legal minimum to be able to run for a seat. The oldest candidate is 87 years old. And finally, the weather. The coming days should be mostly sunny, with daytime temperatures around 20 degrees Celsius. I'm Pavla Horáková, and that's the end of the news.
My name's Zita Asiedu, and up next on Radio Prague, 64 years after his death, a controversial wartime prime minister is finally given an honorable burial. The National Archive analyzes new material on one of the country's bravest women. The latest in the Czech world of sport, and we reflect on 2 years of EU membership. On Monday, the Czech Republic commemorated the 61st anniversary of the end of the Second World War. Over the weekend, ceremonies were held all over the country in honor of those Czechs who lost their lives, and people celebrated the end of over 6 years of occupation. Amongst the events which took place was the full military burial of wartime Prime Minister Alois Eliáš in Prague, 64 years after his execution by the Nazis. Chris Jarrett reports.
The 8th of May 1945, Czech radio announces the approach of Soviet tanks to Prague to liberate the Czechoslovak capital from Nazi occupation. This event marked the end of one of the most brutal periods in Czech history, a war which claimed the lives of 150,000 Czechs, 77,000 of whom were Holocaust victims. One unusual event to mark the anniversary was the burial of the Prime Minister of the wartime protectorate, Alois Eliáš, at Prague's Vítkov Memorial, no less than 64 years after his execution. Eliáš was the only wartime Prime Minister to be sentenced to death by the Nazis in occupied Europe, accused of treason and espionage.
2. října uveřejnil denní tisk protektorátu úřední zprávu,
This radio broadcast on the 2nd of October 1941 announced the news of Eliash's execution to the nation. Despite collaborating with the Germans for the early part of the occupation, this figurehead of the Czech puppet government was continually a thorn in the side of the Nazi regime, maintaining contact with the exiled Czechoslovak government in London and supporting underground resistance. It was for this that he was eventually executed by the Nazis. Jaroslav Hrbek from the Institute of Contemporary History in Prague believes that despite his apparent collaboration, Eliash always had the nation's best interests in mind.
Eliash, and to a lesser extent also President Hacha, tried not to sabotage, I would say, but to put the Czech nation first and the German efforts second. They tried to lead the Czech nation through the dangerous period and to save as much of the autonomy, to save the integrity of the nation.
Eliash was buried with full military honours alongside his wife in the presence of current Czech Prime Minister Jiří Paroubek and Defence Minister Karel Kínl. Also present at the ceremony was the wartime Prime Minister's now 93-year-old nephew, Jiří Eliash, who had more personal memories of a highly paradoxical political figure.
We both used to live in Prague. He was there simply as a soldier and was very busy from time to time. I travelled with him to Slovakia, and I'd like to say he was a real friend to me. We waited a long time for this, and it's not just us, but the whole nation, who can now see the true worth of our uncle, an amazing person.
The Witkoff Memorial was also a focus for remembrance on Monday, when politicians and war veterans alike met to pay tribute to the thousands who died during the war. President Václav Klaus and Prime Minister Jiří Paroubek were among those who paid their respects at the wreath-laying ceremony, as were a number of former soldiers. Elsewhere in the Czech Republic, celebrations had a slightly different feel. In Plzeň, leading Czech politicians, including Prime Minister Paroubek, met at the Thanks America Memorial on Friday to pay homage to the American liberators of the West Bohemian capital. The event is now in its 11th year, and although attendance was notably lower than at last year's 60th anniversary, still over 1,000 people, including a number of veterans of the liberation, 6 American and 3 Belgian, came to watch the military displays which took place in the city centre. Michal Kindel, one of the organisers of the demonstrations, said he aimed to remind viewers of the ugly face of war.
My právě chceme připomenout tomu ukázat divákovi, jak válka opravdu mohla vypadat tu její nejhorší tvář.
We want to remind observers how in reality war can take on a most terrible form. We want to make a Hollywood movie from this, as we'd like to show what we've all read about in books actually happened and has simply never been paralleled.
Co máme nastudováno z knih, jak to opravdu někdy vypadalo.
And so even 61 years on, it seems that the tragedy of World War II is still well remembered in the Czech Republic.
Chris Jarrett with that report. The National Archive in Prague recently received new material donated by Jana Kanská, the daughter of Milada Horáková, the Czech resistance movement hero in World War II, found guilty on trumped-up charges of treason and plotting to overthrow the government by Czechoslovakia's communist regime after the war. Famously, she showed tremendous courage and calm during a preposterous show trial that in the end saw her sentenced to death. Recent years have seen renewed historic interest in Milada Horáková's life, and with new material donated by her daughter, who lives in the United States, Jan Wellinger was interested in learning more. He dropped by the National Archive last week. Now, Jan, who did you talk to and what did you see?
Dida, at the National Archive I spoke to two specialists, Dr. Alena Noskova and Alena Šimánková, who are closely involved with the documentation of Milada Horáková's trial. And since the 90s, new material has come to light, including this box of papers now donated by Milada Horáková's daughter. And the papers received by the Foreign Ministry apparently include correspondence by Mrs. Horáková's husband, who escaped from Czechoslovakia, other family letters, photos, and even a comic book commemorating Horáková's life. That was produced by the New York-based Committee for a Free Europe, and that was back in 1951. It's titled Unconquered, and the pamphlet was previously unknown here in the Czech Republic, archivist Alena Šimánková.
V roce 51 vyšel komiks, který byl věnovaný procesu s Miladou Horákovou.
It's interesting that this comic book was produced as early as 1951. It shows that abroad Milada Horáková was not forgotten. In Czechoslovakia, the ramifications of her trial were still being felt. Others were continuing to be sentenced for alleged ties to the original group.
Now, Jan, what does this pamphlet actually depict?
I was able to look through parts of it, and basically they're key moments from Milada Horáková's life, her role in the Czechoslovak National Council of Women, her role as an underground organizer captured by the Nazis, and, of course, her role as a parliamentarian in the post-war years, and then she was criminalized by the emerging communist regime. If I'm not mistaken, it also mentions international appeals by figures like Eleanor Roosevelt and Winston Churchill, who appealed her sentence, but their appeals went ignored. And as a means of getting information across, it was probably quite effective at the time, and it does show that Mrs. Horáková's situation, her plight, was well publicized abroad.
What about the other items that Milada Horáková's daughter included in the box?
Well, the National Archive stressed that it's only just begun studying the material, but it is clear some of the letters will probably be quite personal or emotional. There are letters by her husband. Then there is a pamphlet marking a commemorative ceremony in Toronto in 1953. And there's even a fascinating letter from Mrs. Horáková's family from 1968 during the Prague Spring. They appealed to have her commemorated during that time of political thaw. Alena Noskova explains who the letter was written to.
Vlastně rodina využila prvních měsíců roku 68. Nakontaktovala se zřejmě s přáteli tady v Čechách.
In the spring of 1968, Milada Horáková's family contacted playwright Václav Havel, associated with Prague's Na Zábradlí Theatre. The idea was to try to organize a series of public events remembering Milada Horáková's life and contribution. Havel replied to the letter with some suggestions, but of course that summer saw the Soviet-led invasion. By December of that year, it was clear that the efforts to organize any such event would come to nothing.
So Václav Havel, an already known figure in Prague circles in 1968.
That's right, certainly in literary and intellectual circles, as well as having connections to the theater. And I have to say that being able to leaf through the original materials was a fascinating experience. Alena Šimánková, who has dealt with Milada Horáková's life and trial to such an extent, told me how specific circumstances really come through when you get a chance to look at the original documents. The scripted quality of Horáková's trial, which was, of course, a mockery. And she says even though the elements of the story are so familiar, that she always experiences them anew when viewing authentic material. So you have an ordinary piece of paper, for instance, confirming no presidential reprieve, a signature or a final signature by defendants, and you realize that's one of the last acts that they ever did, and it really makes you shudder.
And do you think that we'll see even more interest now in Milada Horáková's life?
It seems so. There has been a lot of interest in the last few years. Her life has been the subject of numerous new ambitious projects, included a multi-faceted project for education in schools, and there are also TV and radio documentaries. So I would say yes, that there has been interest, and the latest contribution by Jana Kanska should raise interest even more.
Jan, thanks very much for joining me in the studio. And you're listening to Radio Prague, which is the international service of Czech radio. And it's time now for a sports roundup with Brian Sabin.
First today, it's ice hockey. And the Czech team didn't get off to a great start at the World Championships in Riga. The defending champions managed only a 1-1 draw with host Latvia in their opening game on Friday. The Czechs failed to take advantage of their power plays in that match, a problem rectified in their second game against Slovenia on Sunday. But after leading 4-0, Alois Hadamzic's men were in the end relieved to win 5-4 after the Slovenians fought back. Czech left winger Martin Hrát had this to say after the game.
Já si myslím, že jsme hráli přesilovku celkem dobře celý zápas a myslím si, že první třetí nám to tam padalo.
I think we played well during our power plays throughout the game.
The first period went our way, but after that we had several chances to score that we didn't take advantage of. Then the Slovenians got back into it. We'll have to take their comeback as a lesson.
The Czech Republic secured a place in the quarterfinal with the win. Next, they take on Finland, their first serious opposition. That game will take place on Tuesday evening after the recording of our show. A win over the Finns should ensure easier opponents in the next round. Moving outdoors, former Czech tennis number one Jiří Novák returned after a six-month break on Sunday. Novák, at one point ranked fifth in the world, was beaten 6-3, 6-4 in the first round of the Rome Masters by Italy's Stefano Gavani. Also on the courts, Czech fans had a rare chance on Tuesday to watch the great Martina Navratilova, who was taking part in the doubles at the ECM Prague Open in the city's Štvanice Arena. She has won 56 Grand Slam tournaments in an incredible career and is one of the all-time legends of the game. Navratilova told the media she would be happy if she could motivate others to make their dreams come true.
I'd like to show the joy I get from playing tennis and maybe inspire others to play tennis or do something else entirely or get fit or write the novel they've been thinking about for years and never got around to. I'd like to inspire people to make the most of their lives because I just do what I like. I'm really pleased about that, and I'm lucky that I can do what I want.
She may have left 31 years ago, but Martina Navratilova's Czech doesn't sound too rusty at all. Meanwhile, also outdoors, Czech footballer Jan Koller has managed to catch the end of the season with Borussia Dortmund after a seven-month absence due to injury. But the giant striker, who is out of contract, says he will leave the club in the summer. Tomáš Galasek is in a similar situation and is preparing to quit Ajax Amsterdam. His Czech teammate Zdeněk Grigera, meanwhile, has refused to sign a new contract with Ajax and could move on after the World Cup. And there has been speculation that Milan Baroš has played his last game for Aston Villa. The striker has not been a success at the club and was left off the squad for their last game of the season. I'm Brian Sabin, and that's the sport news.
Now in Talking Point, Linda Mastelist reflects on the Czech Republic's 2 years in the European Union.
On May the 1st, the Czech Republic celebrated its second anniversary as a European Union member state. While the official anniversary passed nearly unnoticed, on May the 8th, a holiday marking the end of World War II, politicians, intellectuals, and business people gathered to discuss the Czech Republic and its future in Europe. Guests included the former head of the European Parliament, Pat Cox, the former Secretary General of the Council of Europe, Catherine Lalumière, and many figures from Czech circles. The forum was one where diverse issues could be raised, and there was time for serious reflection on Czech membership in the European Union. Representing big business in the Czech Republic, the executive director of Česká spotitelna, Jack Stack, told me about how doing business in the Czech Republic has changed since the country joined the EU.
From the positive side, clearly from an economic point of view, our small and medium-sized enterprises can export much more easily and, in fact, you know, don't have as much bureaucracy at the border. So that's been a big up from the point of view of economics. And that has then led to better employment opportunities, and that has also led to growth in GNP. So that's been a big positive. The other positive I've seen is more cultural in the sense that our bank employees at Česká spotitelna feel as part of the European Union, are traveling more frequently and are starting to identify, I believe, not only as Czechs, but also as Europeans.
For another perspective, I spoke to Vojtech Cepl, a justice of the Czech Constitutional Court and well-known critic of the Czech judicial system, who shared his thoughts on the importance of the European Union to the Czech Republic today.
We were trying for 1,000 years to join Western, what is called now Atlantic culture. And at last we are in now, so I am very happy, and I think that's the main contribution, because we have to adjust our system to Western one. I think that the Western system is superior to, for example, Soviet system, which is based on false ideology, which is simply wrong and utopian.
Now, what about this concept that Czechs tend to respect European Union institutions and structures more than they respect their own? Why is it that the Czech Republic doesn't seem to have taken much initiative in creating its own institutions that deem respect from the populace? Why must we be influenced from the outside, whether that be from the East or from the West?
That's simple. Our system of rules of human conduct, that is normative system of rules, which includes ethics and law and aesthetical rules and everything, is backward, fossil. And the other one can improve when we enter the group which is superior, we are improving our position. For example, court in Strasbourg of human rights doesn't allow our courts to deal against human rights. And osmosis, opening the country with the whole tradition, education, it will be a long process to change the minds of people, which I consider that as most important part of culture, what they have in their minds and heart. That's difficult one, because economic system and political institutions you can change in relatively fast way, but law and morality, that's a long run marathon.
While politicians tossed around opinions on whether a federalized Europe is positive or not, Ondřej Liška of the Green Party gave his evaluation of the situation regarding the Czech Republic's use of EU structural funds.
The state of play and the state of use of structural funds in the past years by the Czech government, we see rather critical, because it's a very unique chance how to invest for the future and quality of life in the Czech Republic and its regions. We are standing on the threshold of the next period, 2007 to 2013, using the structural funds. We should be able to use 93 billion crowns per year for the investment in infrastructure, ecological projects, roads, railroads, all possible things, social projects within these 7 years. However, we have huge problems with absorption of these funds. We don't have enough of quality projects. We don't have people who understand how to use this money, how to distribute this money. We see this as a huge problem. What we suggest, we propose to tackle three main problems. One is that the bureaucratic burden. We have to make it much easier to be able to deliver the funds to the people who really need it, which means this distribution system that we have now is rather complicated. There are a lot of ministries that distribute them. If I'm, let's say, NGO or a mayor of a small local community, I have a problem to fill up 80 or 120, sometimes 150 pages of documentation to be able only to approach the funds. So this is one thing. The second thing is that the user fund is not really transparent. You can hardly track down where the money goes and what is the quality of the project. So what we want is to take all these dotation titles from all ministries and make it to one agency. It will be very transparent, will be accessible to public, and will be accessible to all those who want to use this money.
Okay, and my other question to you, joining the European Union, how do you view the overall situation of this country's membership in EU structures?
The membership of Czech Republic in the European Union has definitely brought many, many benefits that definitely are more numerous than negatives that the membership brought. One of the negative sides, I have to say, is, for example, the transport that passes through Czech Republic. It increased by 40% of tracks on the roads of Czech Republic, which is a really big problem. Therefore, what we propose also to tackle this problem is to
put the tracks on the rails, which is a solution that functioned already in other countries, for example, Switzerland and then partly in Austria, where the country decided to get all these loads and loads of goods, put them on the railroads and to save the environment of its own country. Definitely young people, I see, have immediately, naturally accepted the fact that they live in European Union. I see that the European feelings, the, let's say, ability to travel, to study abroad is much bigger. However, also the, let's say, generation of my parents, they are about 50, 60 years old, see that these threats that many populists warned about before we entered the European Union were just a populism and not a real fact.
So 2 years in, opinion polls reflect the fact that most Czechs view EU membership as a positive move, and now they're looking to the future and focusing on ways to enhance business relationships and further improve this country's infrastructure.
Now that was Talking Point with Linda Mastalir, which brings us to the end of today's program. My name is Dita Asiedu. Happy listening.
Ici Radio Prague, programme en langue française des émissions internationales de la radio tchèque, Ondes Courtes. Pour bénéficier d'une agréable réception, voici la grille de nos horaires en temps universel et fréquence en kilohertz. Six heures vingt-sept. Europe, 5930, 7345. 7h30, 7h57, Europe, 9880, 11600. 16h30, 16h57, Europe, Afrique Centre, 5930, 17485. 18h30, 18h57, Europe, Afrique Ouest, 5930, 13580. 22h, 22h27, Amérique du Nord, 7345, 9415. Nous vous invitons à l'écoute sur le web. Pour cela, veuillez vous connecter au site www.radio.cz/français. Radio Prague est aussi sur le satellite. Vous trouverez toutes les informations sur notre site www.radio.cz/français. Pour nous écrire, voici notre adresse. Radio Prague, émission en langue française. Vinohradska 12, Prague 2, code postal 120-99, République tchèque.